1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. One person died in Mississippi as a result of Friday's severe weather. It's now being blamed for 11 deaths across five states. Five of those deaths came in Arkansas, where the National Weather Service said a catastrophic tornado swept through an area near Little Rock. Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders said,
"We will help our neighbors. We will ensure that every Arkansan who needs assistance has it. Our message and our mission is really simple. The people come first and the paperwork will come second."
There was no tornado reported in Belvidere, Illinois, but one person there was killed after a roof collapsed on a theater during a concert. 28 people were hurt. The floor of a Manhattan courthouse where former President Trump will appear in front of a judge Tuesday's already been sealed off. Still not clear if the former president will be fingerprinted or have his photo taken when he surrenders to authorities after his indictment. And Pope Francis says he'll attend Palm Sunday Mass in St. Peter's Square. He was released from a Rome hospital today after a respiratory infection. This is ABC News. Biden Friday called on Russia to release American journalist Evan Gershkovich, a Wall Street Journal reporter detained in Russia on an espionage charge that both the White House and the Wall Street Journal deny. The EPA is changing how trucks can be available in California.
The EPA is using an advanced clean trucks rule to let California go ahead and require up to half of all new commercial pickups, garbage, cement, and delivery trucks get greenhouse gas emissions down to zero by 2035. That would mean either using electric or other non-polluting fuel. Six other states also working toward that goal, including New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington State.
College basketball's men's Final Four tips off tonight in Houston with some newcomers like Florida Atlantic. They take on San Diego State. Then it's Miami and UConn. The women's national championship is set thanks to Caitlin Clark's 41 points to help Iowa beat defending national champ South Carolina. Iowa will play LSU for the title tomorrow. Brian Clark, ABC News.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else.
It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin.
Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Two American banks collapsed in the past week. As Eric Tigedoff reports, some consumers are considering alternatives like credit unions.
Troy Stang is head of the Go West Credit Union Association, which represents more than 300 credit unions in Oregon and five other states. He says tumult in the financial market historically generates interest in the local structure of credit unions.
Whether it was with the dot-com bust, whether it was with the activities that led up to the Great Recession, consumers at their kitchen tables started having these conversations more intentionally about who is it that we do our financial services with.
Silicon Valley Bank's collapse is the second largest bank collapse in U.S. history. To get depositors their money, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has stepped in. Stang notes that National Share Insurance Fund, administered by the National Credit Union Administration, is the equivalent regulator for his institutions and is paid for by the credit union system. Stang says credit unions are not-for-profit and member-owned.
We're not accountable to Wall Street investors. We're not accountable to other forces outside of our membership. And so it's a much different model.
Stang says many of the credit unions in his association have spent the last week reassuring customers and noting differences in their institution structure from others. He adds a strong financial system is important for consumers, regardless of which institution they bank with. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome indeed to the second hour of our broadcast on this beautiful Saturday morning, April 1, in Wisconsin, in the United States of America, on the face of our planet. As always, talking with you, talking about the major stories in law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you with us on this second hour of our broadcast this morning, spending most of our first hour talking about the lessons to be pulled from, to be gleaned from what's going on in Israel right now, having to do with its own challenges when it comes to the rule of law, separation of powers, the role of the judiciary, and the attempts by the leadership, the Prime Minister there in particular, to overturn, to undermine the judiciary going forward, the stopping of that by the very populace who plainly responding to what this attempt is all about and saying no. In this hour, yes, we're going to get back to the major story percolating up and out of New York this past week, having to do with the announced indictment of the former President Donald Trump by Alvin Bragg, who's the DA of Manhattan. We're also going to spend some time talking about other issues in this hour related to the implementation of justice in America, announcement about the suit by the Justice Department, a civil lawsuit against Norfolk Southern for the horrific spill in East Palestine. We're going to talk about another major story coming out of a federal judge who has decided that preventive care aspects of Obamacare are unconstitutional. The appeal certainly going forward on that. And then also going to talk about abortion once again, a significant ruling coming out of the state of New Mexico, affirming the privacy right to an abortion based upon that state's posturing and its position when it comes to privacy rights and rights to reproductive options in that state. Lots more coming up here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me. Callers, always welcome at 844-967-2789. And let's begin with some callers this morning as we get into first this major story about the Trump indictment, other things. Gary, your comment, your question, your thought coming in to us from Sussex.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Jim, for taking my call. I just want to know, and I've talked to you before.
Yes, okay, absolutely. Glad to have you back.
Well, I listen to you. Sometimes I just can't talk because I'm going between my jobs, and I just don't have enough time. But I do listen between. I'm just wondering, and this is just when I base my opinion. It's just my opinion. It's not fact. It's how I look at life.
Okay? That's what America's all about. We exercise our right to speak freely, right? Absolutely.
Right. So. My point is, I think if for the Democrats, what they should do is this. They should get Biden to go out there and publicly say that this is a witch hunt against my political rival. He would boost his his popularity a lot with at least some Republicans, very few, but a lot of independents. But by him keeping his mouth shut, because he knows this is going to bite him in the butt. If they go in, and which they already did, indicted him, and if they go on with this thing, the Republicans are going to go nuts, and they're going to start going after everybody, his family, his brother, his son, and all sorts of stuff. This is going to open a can of worms like we've never seen before. And in my opinion, before Trump, things were pretty civil. But when Trump was elected president, before he even served a day as the president, which there was a month and a half between the election and or whatever, 2 months, right, the transition period, they were out to get him the very next day. And to me, it just shows people like myself that this is, like, I hate to use the word witch hunt, but that's what it looks like to me. Okay. Now, right, as of a couple weeks ago,
And Gary, you're breaking up a little bit, having some difficulty hearing you, but let me comment on that. And again, important to understand, we all have views on these kinds of things. Again, plainly, the president and other people have the obligation, I would say, to talk about the integrity of our systems, including the judiciary. And where I would part company with you, again, respectfully, is it for the president or anyone to come out and say that this indictment of the president, which we're going to talk about in just a few moments here, is a witch hunt as a way of accomplishing some political advantage. I don't think that's wise. And I don't think for him politically, more importantly, it is contrary to what's really going on here. What happened here, as we know, and we'll get into the story, Gary, and I appreciate the comment or the question. It's just this, that we have a grand jury. What is a grand jury? They're not witch hunters. They're people who are brought together to review evidence. In this case, a grand jury in Manhattan. They review this for a number of months going on there in Manhattan under the supervision of the court to ensure that there's integrity there. They hear evidence, they review documents, testimony, all those kinds of things. And what they do in the end is determine whether there is probable cause. That's our system of justice in America and in New York as well, to determine whether or not there's probable cause to return charges. Not proof beyond a reasonable doubt at this point. But what happened, of course, what it was announced by Alvin Bragg, the DA, just this past week, is that independent grand jury found probable cause to believe that indeed there's a basis to charge the former president, perhaps others. We don't know. We haven't seen the indictment yet with crimes under the state of New York's code. That's a process that we can embrace, not a witch hunt, but a process that is premised upon 240 years of history here in our nation. And while I recognize, Gary, again, a good statement about your own opinion on this, we can talk about that process without suggesting that somehow it has been undermined or is the product of politics. It is not. It is not. And has not been. Our system is that this gets tried now. We assume that, as in all situations where a defendant is charged, which Mr. Trump now is, presumption of innocence attends him until that time, if ever. As a trial jury hearing the evidence in public, finds beyond a reasonable doubt that these particular offense conduct, as described in this indictment, has in fact been proven by the government. What happened? Let's talk about that, Gary, based upon your invocation of this of your good question here. The indictment handed out, again, by this grand jury. Important to note at the top, we don't know exactly what it says. Some references in the media to there being 30, 34 particular counts. It stems probably from this investigation being conducted by the grand jury into a payment that was made to this woman named Stormy Daniels, October 2016, during the final weeks of the presidential campaign at that time, trying to sell her story of an affair with Trump. Daniels' representatives had contacted the National Enquirer, offering exclusive rights to her story. David Pecker, who at that time was the tabloid's publisher, longtime ally of Trump, agreed to look out for potentially damaging stories about Trump during that campaign. At one point, apparently even agreed to buy the story of another woman's affair with Trump and never publish it, practiced it called Catch and Kill. Didn't purchase the story. Instead, he and the tabloid's top editor helped broker a separate deal between Mr. Cohen, Michael Cohen, who, again, as we all know well, is the president's fixer, so to speak, his lawyer, and Daniel's lawyer. Cohen paid $130,000. Trump later reimbursed him from his own, presumably the election funds, the campaign funds at the time. Cohen pleaded guilty to charges, including federal campaign finance crimes. The payment, federal prosecutors conclude in that federal case, amounted to an improper donation to Trump's campaign. Federal case, what's happening now in New York is plainly a state incarnation based presumably on the same facts. We don't know exactly, but presumably premised upon the notion that Trump's company somehow falsely accounted for these monthly payments, these payments through Cohen as legal expenses, and that the company records cited a retainer agreement that was probably almost certainly false. That is what Cohen has testified for, too, in front of the grand jury and others as well. Importantly, we know in New York, falsifying business records can amount to a crime, albeit usually it's a misdemeanor. And significantly, again, we'll see what happens as it's released this coming Tuesday, to elevate the crime to a felony charge. The prosecutor, Bragg in this case, has to show that Trump's conduct included an intent to defraud, and that included an attempt to commit or conceal a second crime. Lots of things stacked one on top of another. And so we've got a lot to take a look at when it comes to the likely, almost certainly, announcement of this indictment on Tuesday. We know that Tuesday early afternoon in the southern tip of Manhattan, the former president will appear in a state courtroom there, and he will be arraigned on whatever these charges are all about. At that time, we will see what this indictment says. We'll see what these 33, 34, 35 charges are all about. Could be some speculation on my part here that it is premised, again, principally upon this catch and kill, this hush money arrangement, but could be other matters as well. We just don't know what the grand jury, which appropriately conducts its business in private, we don't know exactly what its focus has been. We know that there has been a document returned, again, remaining under seal. It is not yet in the public domain. Will be announced at the time of the arraignment, and plainly sometime Tuesday afternoon, we will all see what those charges are all about. Again, charges in a state system, not a federal system, for the offense conduct in the grand jury product, which is that indictment. We know that Mr. Trump then will appear, and the judge presiding over this matter will do things like accept his plea, presumably entered by Mr. Trump and his lawyers, a plea of not guilty. That preserves, obviously, his right to go to trial and to contest, as I said before, the allegations in the indictment. The presumption of innocence stays with him, very important to note, until, once again, there was a finding by a trial jury, not a grand jury, a trial jury, unanimously, beyond a reasonable doubt. We don't know when that will happen. Predictably, probably years down the road. Why? Because in the wake of this arraignment, this announcement of the offense conduct, the specific charges in the indictment, the judge will set deadlines for the filing of motions, motions to dismiss, motions for suppression of evidence, motions about all kinds of things leading up to a trial. He may or may not establish a trial date on Tuesday. Presumably, we'll have many, many pretrial conferences and status conferences along the way. And at some point down the road, there will likely be a trial on these charges in Manhattan, prosecuted by Alvin Bragg's prosecutors, by those folks presenting this evidence of the charges in this indictment. Lots more history on this particular case and plainly others, which we will talk about not only on this broadcast, but in other times in the days ahead. Stay with us right after this break for more comments from you and also more commentary about the rule of law in America.
Know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else.
It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin.
Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Here's your updated forecast. A winter weather advisory continues until 1 p.m. this afternoon. Chance of snow this afternoon, otherwise mainly sunny. Daytime highs approaching 36. Winds out of the north, 15 to 20 miles an hour. Lows level off around 18. Tonight, clear skies and quiet. Slight chance for scattered rain showers. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 43. Overcast skies. About an inch of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 30.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
BUKRadio.com.
Thank you for continuing to join me and my producer, Calvin, here at the studios of WAUK Radio. This is a production of Civic Media, as you know. Throughout the state of Wisconsin, we're talking this morning in this particular segment about the other major news story coming out of our nation and our planet, which is the announcement of the Trump indictment by the DA in Manhattan. Right before the break, talking about what that might or might not be all about, and focusing in particular upon, again, the rule of law. Why is this important? Because this is the process by which we bring people to justice. This is a criminal proceeding. It's not a civil proceeding. We know well that the former president is facing many other civil charges out there, including this major $250 million civil lawsuit that's being brought by another New York official. Her name is Letitia James. She is the attorney general of the state of New York. Alvin Bragg, the DA of Manhattan, two different people, two different jurisdictions, if you will. Letitia James alleging that the Trump Organization and the Trump individuals, the Trump family members, including the former president and his children, engaged in all sorts of financial conduct, once again, improperly valuing properties, engaging in financial misconduct, all sorts of things related to the management of the Trump books and finances that are contrary, she alleges, to basic New York law. She is seeking not only to prohibit the Trumps from ever once again being involved in any businesses or corporations in New York, but also seeking fines against him of, again, about $250 million. That lawsuit, that civil lawsuit, again, proceeding ahead, even as this coming week, Donald Trump, for the first time in his life, is facing criminal charges, again, coming out of this offense conduct before he was elected president, right before his election in 2016. Hush money paid through the conduit of his, at that time, fixer and lawyer Michael Cohen, to keep women quiet about the affairs that he had. My own view, and the view of many people out there, is that it's not only a state violation, arguably, we'll see what Alvin Bragg tells us, but also a federal violation of federal election laws. Why? Because you're compromising the capacity of people to know
about things that are significant to their vote. Doing so probably in violation of the financial aspects, rules and regulations imposed upon a campaign, using monies in that case, again, to engage not only in this particular hush money approach, but also to do it in a way that is contrary to our public visibility about monies in that type of setting. And so lots of people out there believing, once again, that the federal government should have also charged this, but it did not happen. And plainly going ahead this coming week with the state charges premised upon the same factual predicates. We've got Dick calling in from Madison. Dick, thanks again for calling in this morning. Always glad to have your thoughts or your perspectives.
I saw a poll earlier this week, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, that said that 57% of people believe Trump, if indicted, should not be able to run again. That said, I don't understand the party that here's the guy's resume. I mean, he's up against this hush money thing, the situation with Georgia, the mishandling of documents, we don't know about that yet, impeached twice, lost a popular vote twice, the January insurrection, lost the House, lost the Senate, and potentially many more legal cases. Why would you want him under any circumstance to be the guy that carries the torch for your party? I don't get it.
Right, right. And a rhetorical question, certainly, Dick, but a good one, right, to ask anybody in the political realm, why is this your standard bearer? Why is this the person who you believe should be elected to the position of the most powerful person on the face of the planet, in charge of the executive branch, in charge of our nation in ways big and small? As you indicated, well over half the people in America think he should not be able to run again. I'm going to seize upon that particular observation as well and say, you know what, as you appreciate, Dick, and others do, under the Constitution, the way that James Madison wrote it, there are basically three qualifications. You have to have lived in our country for a while. You have to be naturally born here, and you have to be more than 35 years old. Well, it turns out that Donald Trump qualifies on all three of those grounds. No other rules and regulations in our Constitution, so he can run. And he is running, as we know. Nothing to prevent him from continuing to run, even as he is under these federal charges. Dick, you did a great job of summarizing all the other things out there. Civil cases, criminal cases, federal cases, state cases, all kinds of things. We didn't even talk about the E. Jean Carroll matter. All sorts of other things that are out there facing him and putting him in peril. But also sending, Dick, to your issue, this message that this is not the kind of person who should be in the presidency. It is, as I've said in the past, from my perspective, an embarrassment historically that our nation, in the times in which we live right now, sent this man to the White House initially. As you indicated, did not win either popular vote, but enough electoral votes in 2016 to capture the White House legitimately and lawfully. Followed that up by engaging in obstruction of justice during the course of his first months. Concluded his term by attempting to mount an insurrection, overturning the results of that. Brings these documents even upon his departure from the White House. Brings those to Mar-a-Lago. Probably crimes there. Certainly improprieties in management of those documents, all kinds of things out there. And Dick, once again, your advocacy, regardless of politics, regardless of what one thinks about the policies that he may or may not bring to that position, why is it that this is the kind of person, given the other folks who are out there who could be in positions on both sides of the political aisle, Republicans, Democrats, independents, members of other parties, why is this the person? Why is this the person who should and may well be, even as he's under indictment? It may well be that in the coming calendar year, the next 18 months or so, he could well be the nominee of the Republican Party once again to face presumably Joe Biden in the Democratic side of things for the presidency in 2024. Stunning, stunning development. And the underlining of that this week, that for the first time in history, we now have a president who is going to be under criminal charges. We're going to talk about a collateral aspect of that, but after the break, and take more callers here on Morning Cannolis. Stay with us for all of that discussion and more.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media.
Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. There were more than 50 tornadoes reported in a 24-hour period in several states. One of them was described as catastrophic by the National Weather Service. That struck near Little Rock, Arkansas. 5 people were killed in Arkansas. There was no tornado, but there was severe weather in Belvedere, Illinois, where a roof collapsed on a theater. Gabrielle Llewellyn was inside.
There was a bunch of guys that, you know, got a bunch of people that went over and they lifted the piece of the ceiling off of, you know, whoever was under there.
At least 28 people there were hurt. The death toll from the severe weather now stands at 10 people. It's after one person was found dead in Madison County, Alabama. Sources familiar with the case tell ABC News that former President Trump's facing around 24 criminal counts, including some felonies related to payments made to adult actress Stormy Daniels. He'll be arraigned Tuesday. And Pope Francis says he'll celebrate Palm Sunday Mass after he was released from a Rome hospital today. This is ABC News.
Unthawed or thawed? These are the questions the Kripescast will cover every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Can you just pull them brats out of the freezer? That'd be fantastic.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. There's a bipartisan bill to let pregnant low-income women in Wisconsin keep their Medicaid coverage for about a year. About half of all state lawmakers are co-sponsoring it. There are 82 school referendums in Wisconsin next week. For some, the stakes are high.
The Adams Friendship School District is asking for a 4-year non-reoccurring referendum, exceeding the revenue limit by $3 million. If the referendum doesn't pass, they will have one more chance in the spring of 2024. If that fails, they will be forced to dissolve the district and the schools will be closed. If the Athens district doesn't pass their referendum, they will only be able to operate one more year before closing. For Civic Media News, I'm Melissa Kay.
In sports, the Bucks lost big to the Celtics last night, and Minnesota State's Mike Hastings is the new Badger men's hockey coach. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
If you own a small business, you've probably been hearing a lot about the ERC, how it's worth up to $26,000 per employee, how easy it is, you know the spiel. So why am I still talking to you about it now? Because many of you still haven't filed a claim, but Innovation Refunds can help you close the book on this thing. They're backed by one of those big CPA firms the corporations use, so they can determine once and for all if your business qualifies. And it's free to find out. Go to InnovationRefunds.com. That's InnovationRefunds.com.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Final segments in this half hour of Morning Cannolis, and talking right now about what is undeniably the biggest news story coming out of New York this past week, and that is the indictment of the former president, Donald Trump, his arraignment scheduled for early afternoon this coming Tuesday, at which time we will find out more about what the indictment itself says. This reporting that there may be as many as 30 counts, maybe focusing entirely upon particular things, particular events, particular entries, checks, transactions, as a result of this hush money discovery and investigation, but could be other matters as well. So we'll wait and see what that is all about and how it is that the grand jury, again, this independent court-related body, has codified, if you will, again, with the supervision and oversight of the DA, what it is that Donald Trump allegedly did in New York in connection with the violation of state law there. We also know, as a result of until very recently, the anticipated indictment, now we know the real indictment, that members of Congress, three in particular, some chairs of committees, have requested the Manhattan DA share with them all the information that the Manhattan DA has about this investigation, about the prosecution of Donald Trump. An outrageous request. They know it well. They know it's contrary to the rule of law. They know it's contrary to basic understanding of civics. We've got a federal legislative leaders, three of them in particular, asking a state prosecutor for discovery. Unprecedented, once again, in our history, will not happen, does not happen, arguably violative of the state law, if indeed the DA were to disclose that to the leadership of the Congress. But what is this story all about? We know, well, that Jim Jordan, who is the House Judiciary Chair, Oversight Chair James Comer, and Administrative Chair Brian Steele from right here in Wisconsin, had made this request to the DA, plainly for political purposes, to address their base, demanding to know what this investigation is all about, information about the charges against the former president, obviously. A lot of that going to be produced to the defendant's attorneys in the concept of what's called discovery post-arraignment. That will happen in the days and weeks and months ahead. But inappropriate for the congressmen, the chairs of these committees, to make that request. And sure enough, Alvin Bragg this week, just yesterday, sent back a missive to the three of them, telling them how wrong they are, how basically unfounded their allegation is, and plainly drawing a red line. He says, what neither Mr. Trump nor Congress may do is interfere with the ordinary course of proceedings in New York State. Exactly right. He goes on to say he accuses the trio of improper and dangerous usurpation. An attempted interference with an ongoing state criminal investigation warns them against unlawful political interference. He says this, the committee's attempted interference with an ongoing state criminal investigation and now prosecution is unprecedented, and it is an illegitimate incursion on New York's sovereign interests. He's absolutely right about that. Moreover, and he's directing this again to Comer and Steele and Jordan, your examination of the facts of a single criminal investigation for the purpose of determining whether any charge against Mr. Trump are warranted is, and here we go, is an improper and dangerous usurpation of the executive and judicial functions, and lets them have it in this letter. Even worse, he says, based on your reportedly close collaboration with Mr. Trump in attacking this office, he means his own office, the DA in Manhattan, and the grand jury process. Again, we've talked about it this morning and in other settings. It appears, he says, that you are acting more like criminal defense counsel trying to gather evidence for a client than a legislative body seeking to achieve a legitimate legislative objective. Alvin Bragg pushing back, more than pushing back, on these three chairs of House committees, telling them they're wrong, civically uninformed. Maybe they do know. They do know. They do know how this is, how inappropriate this is, but doing this just for the purpose of sending messages and presuming that their constituents do not know. And that is perhaps the most offensive part of this at all, is that it's plainly premised, the requests themselves, premised upon the notion that we don't understand how this works, and that based upon that, we're simply making this political move in an attempt to bring up our own posture, our own position within our base, contemptible behavior. Alan Bragg having none of it this past week. Catherine is on the phone, calling in from Madison. Catherine, glad to have you with us this morning on Morning Cannolis.
Hi, James. Thank you very much for your show. I was calling because I wish you could just fill me in on what a typical time frame is on indictments like
sure.
this. I'm pretty much unaware of it, and I'll just take your answer offline. So
great.
Thank you.
Catherine, thanks so much for the call. It is a great question, and like all lawyers, I will tell you it depends somewhat upon what the judge does. Both in the federal system and the New York system, there are things called speedy trial obligations. That is, this notion that justice delayed is justice denied, especially applicable in the criminal setting, where you want to make certain that frankly, for the state, for the people who have an interest in prosecutions, no less important, arguably more important for the defendant himself, herself, itself. You want to make certain that, again, under our Constitution, even the Constitution of the state of New York, that their rights are not trampled upon, that they're enforced. And that's the right to a speedy trial. So what happens is that on Tuesday, again, the former president will be arraigned. He'll plead presumably not guilty to the charges. And as I said before, the judge will set up a timeline. He can solicit from the attorneys for the prosecutors, the attorneys from the defendant, recommendations about how this should be done. Presumably months out, there will be the exchange of discovery. There will be allegations, of course, made along the way, maybe simply position statements at this point, not allegations yet, about discovery. And the posture, arguably, from the defense is going to be this is very complex, going to require lots and lots and lots and lots of time. The judge probably will be hearing from the prosecutors as well and will say, you know what, judge, if this is narrow to the hush money event, that yes, there are a lot of documents, yes, there are a lot of transactions, yes, there are a lot of witness statements to look through, but it's not the most complex case that we have ever seen in America. And for that reason, set these proceedings out for some period of time to give the defendants an adequate time to review all that discovery, to get a sense of what the information is. There's an obligation under what's called Brady in the federal system, generally under the state system as well, to disclose to the defense all of the information that is had. And that's where some of the allegations can come in. If the prosecutors, if the government doesn't do that, there could be allegations, motions filed to compel the production, to find that there were not disclosures of everything. That happens with some frequency. Likely that this judge will set a timetable again for the conduct of the disclosure of all of that discovery and motions once again. Almost certainly be a motion to dismiss this prosecution, to miss the case, probably based upon some legal issues, maybe some factual issues as well. That is done on paper. There, the judge could have oral argument on that again as well. Could be other issues. Maybe there's some suppression motions that need to be filed about the evidence that's going to be presented, a part of that discovery. All kinds of things can happen. All of that in the pretrial setting. And likely he will set a trial date. Maybe on Tuesday, maybe at some point in the near future. My own estimate is that because of the high visibility nature of this, that trial date unlikely to be in this calendar year, maybe not even the next calendar year. He may set it and it may be postponed multiple times. We have seen that happen. And again, in all those circumstances, the judge has to make a finding that it is in the interest of the defense, interest of the people, that the speedy trial obligations be extended, that the limitations on the postponements on that can, in fact, be suspended somewhat, but it's got to make findings about the interests of justice to do that. And so all of that depends upon the particular statements made by the parties, the complexity of this particular matter, the discovery produced, the motions and the hearings on those that are coming up. This is going to consume, at least from my estimate, 2, if not more years before we see a jury that is selected. Lots of issues to be raised there about the impaneling of a jury. In America, in Manhattan, I think it can be done. People can decide cases based upon what they see in trial and not based upon what has been presented in the media. Great question. We'll be answering that in greater detail as this case plays out in the days and weeks and months and, yes, probably years ahead as well. Gene, calling in from Eau Claire. Glad to have you with us once again on this high news morning. Thanks, Gene.
I'm calling. I have comments on everything, but I'm just calling today to thank you so much from all of us who have been paying very close attention and explaining things for us and taking your time to educate us on all of these areas plus what we can do. So I just wanted to call and say thank you. Your show's invaluable. It is a wonderful show, and you're hitting all of the things that we all are caring about every single day. So thanks again, James. That's all I want to say. Thank you so much. We really greatly appreciate you. And you have a good weekend. Thank
Gene,
you.
Gene, thanks so much for the call. I am flattered by that. And I like to think that hopefully we're doing some education here. I do it because of people like you, Gene, and other callers this morning, all thoughtful people who are engaged in America, engaged in these issues, reading the news and consuming the news and understanding it. It is my own background, obviously, as a former criminal prosecutor, a civil litigator. I still continue to do an awful lot of civil litigation to this day, a lot of speaking, a lot of teaching, a lot of presenting on these issues on a regular basis. I am honored, not only by your wonderful comments, Gene, this morning, but by this opportunity to spend some time on air doing what I can do based upon my background, my experience, to educate and to talk about these all important issues. We also have another caller, so we appreciate very much those kinds of comments. Thank you so much. I am flattered, and I thank you for that very, very positive comment. We also have another caller on the line right now. Mark, why don't you go ahead with your comment, your question? Glad to have you with us also, Mark. And Mark, if you are there, you're calling in, I think, from Sussex, and glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
It's funny because you're, again, I'm going to preface this by saying that I was a Trump fan, and I'm not a Trump fan anymore, but all of the BS that the Democrats have pulled against him, all of these fabricated, all of these conspiracy theories, it's just amazing. And again, I do not want him to be the Republican nominee, but again, has he been convicted of anything? Absolutely not. Does Joe Biden come out there and fabricate stuff every single day? Every single day I hear something new coming out of his mouth that is just a complete lie. But you'd never comment on that. Again, I want to say that I'm not a Trump fan any longer. But all of these conspiracy and all this crap, this is really bad for the United States, what happened this week.
And Mark, I appreciate the comment, as always. That's why we take callers from all sides of the political aisle. Glad to have you with me this morning. Needless to say, I disagree with you, and that's a part of America, too. I don't think that our discussion on these morning broadcasts is jaded. What I try to do is present the facts that are known, try to indicate that, again, reasonable people can interpret them differently, but the descriptions are always not fabricated. And I disagree with you with due respect that the things that our current president says are all lies and are all products of conspiracies. But we appreciate the comment, and that's what this broadcast and about America is generally. That's the First Amendment. That's what James Madison said we can do. And going forward, we will continue to take your calls and take those observations of others on all sides of the political aisle. I promised in this morning's broadcast, we talk about a few other issues. Again, anticipating more on the prosecution of Donald Trump down the road. Let's talk about a few of those other issues as we continue our discussion this morning. We know about the tremendously horrific environmental damage caused by a train derailment on the Ohio-Pennsylvania border a number of weeks back, spilling these hazardous chemicals into nearby creeks and rivers near East Palestine. We know about that, a huge event, and the company Norfolk Southern causing that, doing some things right now with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and its own entities to try to accomplish the cleanup. And all of those, again, a continuing focus of all of us in America, not just in that particular part of our nation. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what the U.S. Department of Justice is doing in response to that, also a part of the enforcement of the rule of law under the Clean Water Act, which we've talked about a lot. The Clean Water Act, important to the enforcement of our integrity. And come back, stay with us for that presentation, that discussion, and why it's important going ahead right here on our morning broadcast.
If you own a small business, you've probably been hearing a lot about the ERC, how it's worth up to 26 grand per employee, how easy it is, you know the spiel. So why am I still talking to you about it now? Because many of you still haven't filed a claim, but Innovation Refunds can help you close the book on this thing. They're backed by one of those big CPA firms the corporations use, so they can determine once and for all if your business qualifies. And it's free to find out. go to InnovationRefunds.com. That's InnovationRefunds.com.
Weather brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese and Popcorn Shop at CivicMedia.us/shop.
Home of buttery popcorn treats and make your mouth water.
Tangy cheddar and jalapeno, dill pickle and Texas cheddar, and more. CivicMedia.us/shop.
Part of the proceeds benefit Wisconsin athletic programs.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. A winter weather advisory continues until 1 p.m. this afternoon. Chance of snow this afternoon. Otherwise, mainly sunny. Daytime highs approaching 36. Winds out of the north, 15 to 20 miles an hour. Lows level off around 18 tonight, clear skies and quiet. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 43. Overcast skies. About an inch of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 30.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
AUKRadio.com.
This is our final segment this morning on Saturday, April 1 of Morning Cannolis. Before the break, talking about what the Department of Justice is now doing in connection with the horrific environmental damage caused by Norfolk Southern and its train derailment of a number of weeks ago in East Palestine. Just this past week, the Attorney General Merrick Garland announcing that it is seeking to hold the company accountable for what he describes as unlawfully polluting the nation's waterways and to ensure it pays the full cost of the environmental cleanup. A civil lawsuit brought by the Environmental Natural Resources Division of Maine Justice, and again, an attempt to collect the fines, the costs of the cleanup, holding Norfolk Southern responsible for past and future costs in connection with that horrific event. Why is that important? Well, it's under the Clean Water Act. We know the Clean Water Act is also the subject of review right now by the U.S. Supreme Court in a case that we've talked a lot about, a case involving Sackett. That's the name of the case pending right now before the Supreme Court. More importantly, it underscores once again what good government does when it comes to enforcing the laws, the environmental laws, but ensuring that integrity is followed not only in the cleanup itself, but also in the financial parts of this. This is going to be plainly a huge, huge cost imposed to clean up this environmental damage caused by this railroad disaster there in East Palestine. The Department of Justice, appropriately, rule of law, justice, government in action, suing the Norfolk Southern train company this past week to ensure that justice is done when it comes to that. I'm going to talk about one other important case also coming out of our federal courts just this past week, and that is that a federal judge in Texas who previously had addressed the legitimacy of the Affordable Care Act issued just this past week a very far-reaching ruling just on Thursday that prevents the Biden administration from enforcing a provision of the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act, sometimes called Obamacare, that provides patients with certain types of free preventive care, and that's the key. Prevention, again, a major portion of the Affordable Care Act for 10 years in place, and that includes screenings for cancer and depression, diabetes, and HIV. The judge, his name is Reed O'Connor, Federal District Court, Northern District of Texas. The injunction, if you will, applies nationwide. And if it stands, again, the Department of Justice has already indicated it's going to appeal that ruling, could have some very far-reaching implications for millions of Americans out there, bringing the nation, again, back to the states, from my perspective, back to the days, rather, when before the 2010 law, when insurers were free to decide which preventive services they would cover. Now, even though the injunction takes effect immediately, the review from most insurers is that this decision would not have any immediate impact upon people's coverage, making clear that Americans should have some peace of mind that there'll be no immediate disruption, care, or coverage. Still, there could be some significant changes over time. And the fact that we've got a federal judge out there declaring this portion of the Affordable Care Act unconstitutional is very significant. Again, focusing on the preventive aspects of it, the decision undeniably introduces uncertainty into the future of this portion of our health care system, again, upon which people have relied to access preventive care with no out-of-pocket costs for many, many years. And beyond that, it underscores once again the importance of good legislation, which we have had, and the role that our courts play in interpreting this. Now, undeniably, as I said, the Department of Justice is going to be appealing this order. It does not, as an important aspect, doesn't, like some of the previous challenges, undermine completely the entire structure of the Affordable Care Act, but certainly places a challenge in the wake of this decision to the provision of preventive options and preventive care going forward. And so even though this was not particularly a surprise coming from this judge, he had previously ruled that some portions of the Affordable Care Act are violated the Constitution, still comes, as we all know, a week after the 13th anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, the signing of it by President Obama in 2012. And so it's significant not only in timing, but also in terms of the future of that. We'll look forward to hearing more about the appeal of that very major decision down the road, and also talking about the role of the federal judiciary in deciding these major issues that have tremendous impacts upon the healthcare and other aspects of our lives in America. We have a couple more callers in our last minutes. We're going to take those callers on this Saturday, April 1. First, Tom calling in from West Dallas. Tom, your comment or question on this good Saturday morning.
Thank you. Thank you for your show. I look forward to this every Saturday morning.
Great, Tom. Thanks so much.
My question is for the last topic. If it's going to take a year or two for this case to get through the courts for Trump, what about him running? And God forbid that he would get elected again and this case isn't done. What does he then get executive privilege again, or how does that work?
All right, Tom, you have pointed your finger, I think, one of the major questions and concerns that is out there. I'm going to spend a little time talking about that. And I'm taking a note here also, Tom, because that's the kind of thing that, especially after we hear the schedule next week, I'm going to revisit next week as well. But the short answer here on this Saturday morning is just this. Your point is so well taken. It is going to take a very long time for this case to go to trial. Understand also that even assuming that there is a conviction sometime in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, I don't know how far down the road, likely an appeal to the appeals court as well, could ultimately go to the Supreme Court. So it'd be a long period of time. During that period of time, Tom, your very good question, is there any prohibition on him or anyone else running for elective office? The answer is no. Under the Constitution, just these three obligations, including residency and natural born citizenship and the age of 35, he can continue to run for office, the highest office in our land, even while in New York, and arguably our other places, could be in Georgia, could be in Washington, D.C., if there are federal charges at some point. All of that can take place while he is at the same time running for the presidency. Going to be a fascinating time in this year and in next year, especially 2024. Highly unlikely this is going to be resolved anytime. And going back and forth, if you will, from the campaign trail and the interconnection between that and a major political candidate running for office, the importance of that, the significance of that, the unprecedented nature of that, Tom, cannot be overstated. Nothing prohibiting him from doing it. I'll leave you with even this additional thought. If he is convicted, there's actually nothing in the Constitution that prevents him from even taking office. There is the 14th Amendment that talks about insurrectionist behavior. We will talk about that more in the future. But the Constitution doesn't talk about this. Why? Because once again, Tom, we are going down an unprecedented path. Thanks so much for that call. Thank all of my callers this morning for their wonderfully insightful and engaging questions and comments. We'll take more of that next week here on Morning Cannolis. Join us for next week's engagement on issues of law, government, and that all-important aspiration for justice in these United States of America. Thank you, everybody. Have a good week.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else.
It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin.
Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
If you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.